From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Most of us have had one or two, these days maybe 20, roommates, that is, in college, out of college, and getting started in life, and even later. Sometimes it's necessary to help pay the bills. Sometimes it's for companionship. It can be great. It can be terrible. And it sure shows us a lot about our own proclivities and who we are as humans. This hour on Point, True Tales of Roommates. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What's your roommate story? Your best, your worst, your weirdest? Why did you take on a roommate? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from New York is Stephanie Wu. She's a longtime magazine editor and editor of the new book, The Roommates, True Tales of Friendship, Rivalry, Romance, and Disturbingly Close Quarters. Stephanie Wu, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Okay, we asked our listeners for roommate stories. You've got a bunch, and they're great in this book, and we'll hear some. I've got some really encapsulated versions here. I hope these will elicit even more in the course of the hour. Kat writes to us, "My roommate was dating a cop. He'd leave his gun on the coffee table. One night, his ex and two men came to our house and woke us by pounding on the door, intending to beat him up. She was afraid of gunplay. I pushed my dresser against the door, crouched in a corner, no gunfire, but decided to move out." And that's just one. We've got story after story of weirdness with roommates. The gun on the coffee table, just the beginning. You scratch people on this, Stephanie, and a lot of stories come tumbling out.
Everyone's got one.
It feels like a great age of roommates. Between expensive housing and 20-somethings trying to find their footing and not wanting to live at home, and maybe singles and even seniors these days wanting somebody to help share the bills and share life, roommates seem more common than ever.
It's true, and I don't think it's something that's going away. I think the latest census figures say that something like there's been a 40% increase in roommates in the past 10 years, which is a gigantic number if you think about the fact that the number of college graduates isn't going up that quickly.
It's not only young people either. It's singles later in life who are deciding to go that way. It's seniors who may have been divorced or lost a companion and looking for somebody in the house.
Yep. And there's even many examples of people, becoming roommates with their mother. For instance, Bradley Cooper is a famous example of a celebrity who is proud that his mother is his roommate and he takes her to all the award shows.
Of course, he's rich enough as a famous actor that he doesn't have to go home. She can come to his great place. More
True.
Stories from our listeners. Camille writes to us here on Facebook. Her college roommate brought four different guys to their room on the first five nights of college. Late at night, drunk each time, noisy too. On the last night, she stopped midway through their amorous activities, wailing, "No, wait, I can't. I'm wearing my boyfriend's T-shirt," sobbing, "You have to go." Okay. It works both ways, though. Lauren writes to us on the first day of college. They went to chapel, and her brand new roommate, she looks over. She's wearing a beautiful pearl necklace swiped from her jewelry box back in the room.
Yes.
And 30 years later, she's her lifelong best friend. It's not always weirdness and trouble. It can turn into real important relationships, too.
Absolutely.
Tell us about some of the stories you found out there in the dozens that you've got in your book, Stephanie.
My personal experience with roommates was not so bad, but I did know that going out there and hunting for the stories, there would be some horror stories out there. And one fantastic example, this is actually the first story that I got from my book, was the girl whose college roommate told her that she was keeping a dead hamster in their freezer so that she could later perform taxidermy on it and hang it in their very small college dorm room, which, was obviously not acceptable and
in there next to the ice cream bars and whatever.
Yes, exactly. Very sanitary. But it led to, a larger thing with college administration. And this is a large state university. And the only way to convince the roommate to get rid of this, very sad hamster was by instituting a new dorm-wide rule, no pets dead or alive.
Well, look at the best kinds of roommates. And of course, best can mean lots of things to lots of people. You've written about the worst kinds of roommates that you can counter out there. Take us through some of those types and maybe some stories that illustrate them from your collection, Stephanie.
Let's see. There are quite a few common worst types. You have the passive aggressive, you have the hoarders, the people who borrow from closets and never return things. So I think those are common types. But I was really more interested in the wild card. So this, you know, amateur taxidermist is certainly one. But, you know, stories of bed bugs followed by fleas, stories of, say, living in an RV for 3 months in a very cramped space. So I wanted to find the extraordinary ones that were stories you didn't even think would exist and make you feel a lot better about your own roommate experiences, hopefully.
The passive-aggressive roommate, maybe the note writer, like what?
Like, there's a great example in my book of a roommate who was very possessive of her belongings and didn't want anyone else using them, including the couch in the living room. She said was off limits. No one except for her could
sit on
that's
a little severe.
Said couch. And of course, everything in the fridge that was hers was off limits too. So the girl I interviewed had a friend stay over for a few days, and like any great guest, this guest offered to bake cookies for her hosts,
okay,
accidentally using the roommate's butter. So the roommate fished the empty butter wrapper out of the refrigerator, taped it to the fridge with a Post-it. Seems like it's always a Post-it.
Right.
And in capital letters, "This is my butter," 3 exclamation marks.
That's going to be tough. Julia writes to us here online about the things taken out of the closet, you know, talking with her roommate about wearing her clothes without permission. Mm-hmm. Denials all around. But then Julia is looking at photographs on social media where her roommate's wearing her clothes. There's just no way around it. There's sort of endless permutations here. Let me get our listeners in right away. Robert in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Robert, thank you for calling. You're on the air. What's your experience?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Okay. So I was an only child growing up, so I never had to share anything with anybody.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I go off to college, you know, age 18, never shared a room with anyone. I have a half-brother who I barely saw, so I never, you know,
yep,
had any sort of home-styled interaction with another human being other than my parents. And every roommate that I've ever had when I was in college was, it was like playing Russian roulette with bullets in all the chambers. It was just... It was awful. My first roommate was, okay, the way that the dorms were laid out, there were 2 bedrooms and a bathroom in the middle. 4 people shared the bathroom and 2 people were in each room. My roommate, my freshman year, was disgusting. Like, piles of dirty laundry everywhere, beer cans, whiskey bottle, rabbit pellets.
Okay, Robert, we got the picture. You've grown up a little now. How do you look back on this? Is it them or is it you, the squeaky clean single child who never shared a room and just isn't cut out for the variety of human expression?
Well, turns out I'm not squeaky clean myself,
but
I'm not that bad. it was just atrocious. I got lucky that semester, though. I met a friend in one of my other classes who lived in the area, and throughout most of that semester, I just ended up staying at his house, you know, 90% of the time.
Robert, so we feel the pain, we feel the trauma that this was for you. I appreciate your call. Stephanie, who, in your experience, looking at all these stories, who's best prepared to jump into this, what can be rough and tumble pool, and who's not?
You know, I don't know that you can be best prepared. In fact, the one thing that linked all the stories in the book was the unpredictability. You know, you might think you've got a great personality, you can get along with just about anyone, you're not too dirty, you're not too clean. But what it comes down to is when you put 2 different people in a very small space, problems can arise or great things can arise. And there's really no way to do more than just be an open person and communicate as best you can and not send too many passive-aggressive text messages.
And, of course, these days it may not be stuck with a single person in a small apartment. Here's Jesse writing to us. I love these stories. Send them in on Facebook or Twitter, wherever you like, On Point Radio. Jesse writes, "I'm stuck with my girlfriend's three brothers and one of their sons in a three-bedroom apartment. They eat like carrion birds. Anything that's not touched within hours of coming home, they think is theirs. I just had surgery for some carcinoma on his tongue. I can't eat many foods, and yet they raided the food my parents brought me after seeing me in the hospital. You got carrion birds, and it's a big flock right there at his apartment. You got lots of roommates in many situations these days.
Yes, it's true. And, you know, living with other families is particularly interesting. There's a great story in my book about a young girl who moved in with an engaged couple. And shortly after they got married, they let her know they were pregnant. She was welcome to stay. And she did. And she, you know, was, I think, maybe in her early 20s, but getting to experience the new parent experience from an interesting perspective. The baby, thankfully, didn't keep her up at night much, but she did often find the parents passed out and kindly took care of the child while they were like a bit like zombies. So it's a different kind of nuclear family.
That may be more than she bargained for. Julia writes to us, keep these stories coming. She says, I came home to my roommate using my unopened wedding gifts, a handmade glass measuring cup to house the ketchup she was dunking her French fries in. Unopened wedding presents, unopened no more. Stephanie Wu's new book is The Roommates, True Tales of Friendship, Rivalry, Romance, and Disturbingly Close Quarters. Here's Roommate by Tom Schreck. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Love can never bloom with me in the room. That's why I really wish your roommate would leave. Love can never bloom with three in the room. That's why I really wish that your
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the experience of roommates in a time when lots of people have them out of need, getting started for companionship in the middle, later in life. Stephanie Wu is with us. Her new book is The Roommates, True Tales of Friendship, Rivalry, Romance, and Disturbingly Close Quarters. Of course, it's all over in entertainment as well. Fox's sitcom New Girl, Zoe Deschanel, plays Jess. Young woman moves into an L.A. loft with three guys. Here from the pilot, after a big breakup, crashing on a friend's couch, Jess finds a roommate ad on Craigslist, interviews her three soon-to-be roommates.
I still have some questions. I mean, like, no offense, you know, but we barely know you.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, full disclosure, I'm kind of emotional right now because of the breakup, so I'll probably be watching Dirty Dancing at least 6 or 7 times a day. Also, I like to sing to myself a lot. A lot. I'm tired of living with my friend. She's a model. All her friends are models.
How soon can you move in?
Actually, Schmidt, slow up.
All the friends are models, and off we go. Here's NBC's then late-night host, Jimmy Fallon, asking, he asked viewers to tweet memorable things about their roommates with a hashtag, That's My Roommate. Here he reads a few of those.
Some of my favorite That's My Roommate tweets from you guys. Here we go. This first one is from at GooGirl88. She says, my roommate used to put her initials on each individual egg in the refrigerator.
Don't eat them, okay? They're mine.
This one's from at Josh Fowler 2. He says, 2 days ago I received a text from my roommate saying, when you walk into the room, don't freak out, I've got it under control. What does that mean?
Thank you.
This one's from at JC Music. He says, I saw my roommate in an awesome pair of boxers. I said, I have the same ones. He said, I know, they're yours.
Roommate tweets from Jimmy Fallon. You can join us this hour. What's your best roommate experience story? What's your worst? What's driven you to roommates? Economic necessity, something else? And what do we learn by sharing space with roommates? Not your family, not your lover. What do you learn about yourself? Stephanie Wu, stand by in New York. Here's Sarah from Somerville, Massachusetts. Sarah, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. It's very nice. It's very nice to talk to you. It's my first time calling.
Hey, great to have you. What's your roommate story?
Well, I had other people in a co-op in a triple decker in Somerville, which is a pretty small building, but we've all chosen to live together as roommates, and we range in age from about 23 to about 53. I'm 29.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful situation.
23 to 53 and 10 altogether. What makes it great for you, Sarah?
Well, part of it is that we've chosen not just to live as a group of roommates, that we're living cooperatively. We make food buying decisions together. We cook meals together 3 nights a week. And we're committed to addressing conflict before it becomes the passive-aggressive notes on the refrigerator type of situation. So it's really helped me outside of the house as well communicate better with my coworkers, with my friends, and so on and so forth.
And how are you thinking about it long-term? You got 23 to 53, you're 29. How long do you expect you might be in a roommate situation?
Well, I've been there for 2.5 years now, and I'm not planning on leaving anytime soon. There are some people who've lived there for 5, 6, 7 years. It's a community in this particular place, and it's cropping up all over our area and across the country where people are choosing to live cooperatively this way, kind of forming their own intentional communities where, yeah, they're roommates and it saves us a lot of money, but we're also creating a family together.
Yeah. Sarah, I so appreciate your call. Stephanie Wu, it's really interesting, the different generations and iterations of this, but many people have observed lately that millennials are particularly and very community-oriented. Maybe this just becomes a new way, Stephanie. What'd you find?
Yeah, I think that the roommate trend and certainly this moving toward living together, living as a community like that is not going anywhere anytime soon. You know, as you know, the money gets tight and living in big cities where apartments are scarce, if you find a great situation and you're not ready to leave, there's absolutely no reason to strike out on your own, especially when you have that support to fall back on. And I think it's helpful whether you're moving to a new city, whether you're a recent graduate, or whether you're just not ready to cook dinner for yourself 7 nights a week.
We've got Canon writing to us here online saying we can't create a sustainable culture without sharing space. Perhaps living co-ops where people come together based on their values is the way to go. Maybe. Garrett in Oklahoma City. Garrett, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah. Had a pretty cool little story about when I was younger. I was like 18 or 19 or so in the early 2000s.
Okay.
Have a different experience with roommates then as contrasted with a more recent experience. I think it has a lot to do with your headspace. It can be a pretty subjective experience. When I was 18 or so, I was in part of a punk rock counterculture scene, the Mohawk guy.
Okay,
and all
great.
That.
Yeah, okay.
Living in a hotel with four of my friends, one of them which worked there. Well, when eventually they found out and we were kicked out of our little hotel room, we ended up moving in with a lady we knew named Amy, who was in her 30s or so, kind of wanted to get back to that younger feel, we're guessing, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there was 5 people already staying there. So by the time we showed up, that made it 9. We had a big bedroom with kind of the curtains kind of cordoning off each other's little areas. And
okay.
The crazy part is I don't remember it being that bad. You know what I mean?
And how do you look at it now? Would you do it again? Would you avoid it if you could?
Absolutely would never do it again. But not in this mindset. Kind of compare that. Fast forward 10 years, right before I was getting married, we were helping a couple friends who had kind of fallen on some hard times, and that was just 2 people living with us, and that was a definitely different experience.
Garrett in Oklahoma City, punk rocker kicked out of the hotel into this subdivided bedroom, and it worked all right, but he's not eager to go back. Stephanie Wu is with us, editor of the new book, The Roommates. Elizabeth Bernstein joins us as well right now from Miami, Florida, columnist and reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Her column is called Bonds on Relationships, which focuses on relationship, communication, human behavior. Elizabeth Bernstein, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of trends pushing people toward roommates these days, and not just young people, Elizabeth.
I think there's a lot of trends out there. Certainly the economy pushes a lot of people into living together. It's much cheaper to live, with more than one person than it is just alone. But across all ages, something that I was really struck by is that there's so many more people who are not married. There are many, many more singles. So in 1957, for example, there were 70% of people, more than 70% were married. Now that's only 51% of people are married. So a lot more people are uncoupled. And that leads to a lot more people who could be looking for roommates. Another thing that I also really am interested in is I think we've got such an aspirational society. We want to live well, not just pay the rent and have a roof over our heads, but you can live a lot better. You can live in Manhattan with a roommate and maybe out in the sticks without one. So there's that. I can live better with a roommate.
So there's economic necessity, but more than that, there's kind of a lifestyle choice. Double up the incomes and you're going to be in a nicer place.
Exactly. And even if you think about, you know, I know a fair number of people who actually share vacation homes. So they, you know, they don't have roommates in their main home, but, you know, they have a place somewhere that they share, and not a timeshare where they're not there at the same time, but they actually share a vacation home. They're always there together with a roommate.
Stephanie, did you find in your stories people looking for lifestyle accommodations with roommates, or maybe more than that, as our caller Sarah said, who actively wanted that community? With so many singles, people not marrying as much, we're still social creatures, Stephanie.
Absolutely. I spoke to a couple of people who described themselves as serial roommates. You know, they would stay in the apartment, one would move out, they'd fill it with another one. And, you know, this could go on for 7, even 10 years just because they didn't want to give up the apartment, or they just didn't want to live alone. And they enjoyed the companionship, and perhaps they weren't in a relationship, but this was an important part of their social life that they didn't want to give up. And to Elizabeth's point about vacation homes, I think that's quite common as well, certainly on the Jersey Shore, where, you know, it could be younger people, but it could also be working professionals in their 30s who sign up for a summer of sharing a bedroom with someone just so that they can afford somewhere great to go on the weekends.
But, I mean, the thing is, in a marriage or something like it, you typically kind of spend some time figuring out who you want to share living space with, Elizabeth. In roommate scenarios, it may just be straight off Craigslist.
Exactly, which, you know, we've all heard the horror stories of straight off Craigslist. So you want to maybe be more careful about it. But many, even when I think back to, you know, what I mentioned about the vacation homes, I know of people who have bought vacation homes with a good friend. So in some cases, people are choosing their roommates very well. They're thinking of, you know, who do I really spend a lot of time with anyway? I could spend more time with that person to live a certain way, to have certain perks. So, you know, it can go both ways.
Here's comedian Aziz Ansari about the Craigslist path. You've seen him as Tom Haverford on Parks and Recreation, NBC's. Here's a funny bit on roommates.
One thing that scares me about, like, Craigslist and stuff is, like, people go on there and they find random roommates. That's a terrifying proposition to me. Like, the one time I had a random roommate, it did not go well. Like, I would come in the room and it always smelled like tuna. And I'd be like, whoa, not my top 5 smells for the room to have. Why does it always smell like tuna? And it's because this guy liked to eat cans of Starkist tuna all the time. And you know when the juice is there at the bottom when you're finished? He'd shoot the juice back like a tequila shot. Yes, I agree. It's disgusting.
Aziz Ansari on the Craigslist roommate. Stephanie, what did you find about how people typically find and secure roommates?
It's changed a lot in the past, let's say, 20 years. I think back before Craigslist was founded in 1996, there were physical roommate companies that had actual binders of people you could flip through. And of course, it's much easier now, thanks not only to Craigslist, but Facebook and a various of other roommate services that have popped up. And I do have to say, it can really go both ways. We hear more about the horror stories of finding someone random on Craigslist, like Aziz Ansari says, but there are cases in my book where people found their best friend, they found their boyfriend, and it's just a matter of, do the personalities mesh and could it turn out perfectly?
Diane writes to us, she shared a room with a choreographer who worked obsessively, came home in the wee hours, left again at 9 a.m. She had all the benefits of, economically, of a roommate, but never saw her, so it was just kind of an asset. Mark writes to us, says, my roommate's girlfriend throws tantrums like you wouldn't believe, threatens all kinds of stuff, slams doors, jumps up and down stairs, tells him she hates him and all that. Then I get to hear about he hates her because she's psycho. Then after 3 or 4 hours, they're back to do it all over again. Not the best. Kyle in Oklahoma City. Kyle, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
Well, I have always had a roommate. I just turned 30 a few months ago and recently married.
Congratulations.
And I've never been able to live on my own by myself. Even after, you know, getting out of high school and going to college, I've moved to Seattle, been with some friends, and have never been able to financially bear the burden of paying rent and utilities and trying to have a lifestyle that I like.
So you don't mean emotionally. You mean economically. You could never swing it.
Absolutely. And unfortunately now I never get that opportunity to be by myself in a place.
So are you expressing regret that you never could afford the solo life?
I would have loved to have been by myself. My roommates have ranged from decent to very poor.
That's so interesting, but a situation, maybe a generation, where that just wasn't possible. Elizabeth, you know, the old dream was you go out, you get your own place, and then you end up with a partner probably at some point. Who knows? Maybe that's just not part of the picture for a lot of people. Maybe some people aren't looking for that.
Maybe people aren't looking for that. And also, you know, we over the decades, we as a culture, we're getting married later, too. We're pairing up later. So that leaves, you know, a good number of years, sometimes 10 or more in there where, you know, we're again, single, not coupled, and to pay the bills or to live better or for the companionship. You know, we want to have somebody around. We are social creatures. We don't really – some of us thrive living alone, but most of us don't.
I wonder, Stephanie, if there are new kind of protocols emerging as, you know, what we used to call sort of the circumstances of youth stretch into the late 20s and maybe well into the 30s these days. If it's not the odd kind of college thing, if it's more understood and more thoroughly kind of worked through by this generation.
I think so, because, you know, as you read more and more stories about people in their 30s and their 40s living together, there's much less of a stigma against it. And especially in the creative fields when, you know, people want to do what they love, they're not necessarily getting paid well, or they don't not necessarily have a stable job with steady income, then being able to live with other people, oftentimes also in the creative industry, means you can pursue that professional dream, which was not possible many years ago.
Let's go to Kenzie in Worcester, Ohio. Kenzie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was calling to tell a story about my roommates in college. I have dreadlocks, and I discovered I had lice one day.
Oh, no.
I came home from work. I bawled to one of my roommates and told her I didn't want to tell the other roommates that I had. There were four of us all together, three roommates.
Yeah.
And But she encouraged me to tell them, so I even crying to all of them, I told them that I had lice and I was worried I might have shared it with them. But they were so helpful to me. They helped me wash my hair out. They picked the lice out of off of my head.
Oh, my goodness. Kenzie, the things you learn when you're a roommate, how do you get lice out of dreadlocks? It sounds like an epic challenge.
Yeah, it was interesting. We just used a very intense version of the RID kit that you can get from the store, as well as saran wrapping my head. And the wonderful thing is that we got them out. None of them had the lice. We got all the lice out, and I still have my dreadlocks to this day, lice-free. So,
Kenzie, I love the story.
That's all thanks to my wonderful roommate.
Right. You scored roommates willing to pick the lice out of your dreadlocks. Elizabeth Bernstein, that's true love.
That's true love. I mean, there are many marriages where that would have not happened.
Shave it. Start again.
Those are ace roommates. Stick with them.
That's kind of amazing that people can – but that is – you know, you describe people, Elizabeth, at many ages, still wanting companionship and more than companionship, kind of emotional support. There was a very practical example via roommates.
Exactly. And I think, again, another sort of social trend is, you know, we're getting older as a society. The boomers are a huge generation. They're aging. And as you age, unfortunately, you lose your spouses or your partners, your friends and family. So, you know, there's a need still to be companionable, to have friends, to have people there to watch over you, take care of you. So there's that going on, too.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the experience of roommates in a time when lots of people have them out of need, getting started for companionship at all kinds of ages in life. Stephanie Wu is with us from New York. She's editor of the new book, The Roommates, True Tales of friendship, rivalry, romance, and disturbingly close quarters. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. And from Miami, Florida, Elizabeth Bernstein joins us. She writes the Bonds on Relationships column for The Wall Street Journal, a lot of insight about how people are living and thinking these days. Kelly writes to us here, my first college roommate made voodoo dolls. She had dummy dolls and various hair samples. Thankfully, none of the samples were mine. Emlyn, calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Emlyn, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I had a roommate in college that I remember we would leave post-it notes on everything, like some of your other calls had mentioned. And I have to wonder, because you mentioned the social aspect before. I mean, do these people not know how to communicate with each other? Is that why they're leaving post-it notes? They can't face confrontation about even little things like a post-it note under an ashtray or don't use my yogurt? Or it seems bizarre to me that they want roommates, yet they can't communicate with them face-to-face.
Ah, the frustration breathes in every word. Emlyn, I appreciate your call. Stephanie, what do you think? When people get together as roommates, they didn't grow up together. They don't have the little same family microculture. So communication becomes a big deal. What did your stories tell you about how people figure that out or don't?
I think many people are afraid of confrontation. They don't want, you know, the problem to get worse, although I would argue that the post-it notes make it worse. And so they'd rather just leave a note and hope that the problem goes away. And, of course, technology has not helped us here. Facebook messages, text messages, there are thousands of ways now to communicate, to try to communicate with your roommate without actually talking face-to-face. And I think that's unfortunate.
Elizabeth, what's the secret, if you can imagine one? I mean, marriages are tough enough on that score, and there are people who have vowed, you know, to be true and to work on it with one another. A roommate's just very often a relationship of convenience.
Yes, exactly. And I think the secret, if there is one, if we could tap into that, is the same for a marriage, would be space. I talk to people so much about how they live together, how they communicate, how they are in families. And again and again and again, people tell me what helps, especially in marriages, is space. So that's physical space. I'm going to respect the person I live with. I'm not going to raid their closet or their milk. But also it's emotional space. I'm not going to eavesdrop on them. I'm not going to, you know, if they're crabby, I'm not going to press. Why? I'm going to give them sort of space around them. To have their home, too, even though we share a home.
But it gets tough. I mean, you're sharing the kitchen counter. A lot of the spaces that roommates physically share are not that big. That's part of the reason sometimes they're sharing. Oliver in Austin, Texas. You're on the air, Oliver.
Hello.
What's your story?
Okay. So my roommate, he was a bit pampered, I guess, as a child. His mom liked to do things for him, and thus he was kind of unprepared to enter the real world. And I can sort of, I guess, sum it up with one story. So we have this pan, right? And it's got a cover with a grate to sort of siphon off the fat.
Okay.
Now, so my roommate decides, okay, well, I'm going to cook some chicken. Except instead of using the entire pan, he uses the top portion with the grate. So I come home and there's like all sorts of chicken fat smoke, and it smelled terrible for a good 2.5 weeks.
How do you work that out, Oliver? How do you get some culinary lessons?
It's been lesson after lesson. Seems like I had to teach him how to load a dishwasher. I also had to tell him that, no, you can't cut raw chicken and then go opening the cupboards with your gross chicken fingers.
So how do you do? What if he's listening right now? Do you care, Oliver? Or are you past caring?
I just actually passed him on the road. He's doing his own thing. I think he's heading to HEB. Maybe getting more chicken.
You know that radio could be on. Oliver, your roommate may be on the other side of the dial. But I appreciate your call and your story. Let's see if we can find a better one here. Good luck with that chicken grease in the bottom of the stove, Joni in Montpelier, Vermont. Joni, you're on.
Hi.
What's your story?
I had a string of really good luck with Craigslist, and I move around a lot, and I found some really lifetime friends. Just really lucky. First place I moved in, everything. And then when I moved to Vermont a short while back, I found the place. It seemed great. The woman I was living with, she seemed really nice. and, you know, we were friends, we were friendly, and she just went crazy one day. Just came unhinged. It was slow build-up, snippy things, you know, leaving notes, and, you know, it was a gradual build-up, but it culminated in, around Christmas time, I was baking cookies for my family, and...
That sounds very menacing.
Yeah, I know. And she doesn't eat gluten. She believes that she is self-diagnosed as a gluten allergy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was always very careful with, you know, whenever I would use flour in the kitchen. It wasn't part of the rental agreement or anything that I couldn't bake, you know. So I was just baking cookies for my family.
Yeah.
And, you know, she came downstairs. What are you doing? I can't believe that you're doing all this baking. I mean, it was a lot of cookies. But, you know, she's like, you're making me sick and all this stuff. And then, you know, it culminated in her saying, well, if you keep this up, you don't know what I'm going to put in your food to make you sick. And then it was just, it went on and on. She basically threatened to poison me.
How do you work something like that out, Joni, or have you just moved on?
I moved out that day. I was terrified of her.
With a big box of cookies over your shoulder. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, that was, Joni.
Yeah, that was, it was pretty crazy.
Stephanie, how's that line up with the blow-up scenarios that you've collected?
You know, I did hear quite a few stories where everything seemed to be going swimmingly, you know, two roommates coexisting in peace, and all of a sudden, you know, who knows why, they just snapped. And whether it was something that had been boiling under the surface for a long time or whether it was just a really bad day, but it just, again, goes to show that most normal-seeming roommates can have bad days. And, you know, I didn't get anything nearly as bad as threatening to poison someone, but there was a story of two summer camp roommates who were perfectly fine all summer. It was a creative summer camp, and at the end of the summer there was a recital, and at the recital the roommate goes up on stage, proceeds to read an essay in front of a crowd of hundreds about how much she hates her roommate, how she thinks she's messy and gross and inconsiderate. And the roommate, of course, is sitting in the audience thinking, why didn't she say something earlier? Why is she airing all her dirty laundry in front of a crowd of hundreds of people? So you just never know.
Elizabeth, what's the answer here? Is it a sign of emotional maturity to be able to roll with all kinds of roommates? Well chosen, we hope, but who knows? Or is there invariably, you know, if you don't have a kind of life commitment to one another, and maybe you're off Craigslist, or who knows how you found one another, is there invariably a kind of ticking clock on these relationships?
I think they're very hard. It's hard to live with anybody, probably. I would argue that as we get older, we're more set in our ways. We're more used to the way we live. And so then taking a roommate, being thrown together with somebody can be even more stressful than if, you know, we were in college and it happened. But, you know, it's stressful. And we don't have, as you said, we don't have that lifetime commitment. We didn't take vows to stay with this person. We don't have a lot of financial or emotional or even friendship community built up with them, stake in it, really. So not enough skin in the game, maybe, to make it work. But I can see also a blow up that just sort of appears like that.
Mm-hmm.
My gut feeling there is that it's a long time coming. That was probably somebody was holding something back. There was poor communication along the way.
It's hard to figure out when you're being totally candid, when it's a rooming situation and not, you haven't made an agreement to become emotional mates, though you may well, how much skin in the game. Matthew in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Great to have you, Matthew. You're on the air. What's your story?
I've got a story about an old roommate of mine. This is in my mid-20s, and I had a five-year-old daughter at the time. One of my very good friends lived with me for 8 years or so, and then I had another guy that we kind of knew through a few people.
Yeah.
And nice enough guy, but poor decision-making is probably the best description we can come up with. But anyway, so we took my daughter out, my good friend and I. We took him out, took her out one evening to McDonald's. We went out, had a nice time. We came home and showed up at the house, and there's an ambulance sitting out front with the lights on. And we said, oh, boy, what's going on?
Uh-huh.
My other roommate had MS. Nothing serious. He only ever had a couple episodes. Sure. But so we went into the home to find out in a hurry what was going on. And the moment we walked in, you could smell blood.
Great. What was going on?
Well, what was going on is we wanted to find out. So my very good friend, I'm going to call him Solid. Solid looks at me and he says, "Hey, I'm going to take your daughter and we're going to go drive around and stuff." I said, "Okay." So he takes her and he takes my car and they drive around and I go into the next room and my other roommate had been hanging out with this girl that he met out at the bars and stuff and he brought her home. And I guess they'd had too much to drink, and they'd gotten into it real bad, and I guess this girl needed a lot of attention. But there was blood everywhere in my living room. I mean, everywhere. Thankfully, I have hardwood floors, but
there was that seems the least of it. But how much longer were you roommates with Unsolid?
Not so long. It wasn't long after this that we suggested he find another place to stay.
Did everybody survive? To cut to the chase here with all that blood, is everybody okay?
Yeah, everybody was fine. They'd gotten in a fight. She went into the bathroom, locked herself in, so he had to yell at her through the door. She busted open the top of the porcelain toilet and cut her legs up really bad.
Oh.
So we called the ambulance. They came. They got her. My friend had come home by now. He'd taken my daughter over to his parents and come back.
I think we got the gist of it, Matthew. Roommate joy plus blood there in Baton Rouge. I hope that everything got better from there. But, yeah, crazy things can happen. Of course, it can happen with all kinds of people. Brad in St. Bonifacius, Minnesota. Brad, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. First-timer. Love the show.
Wonderful. What's your story?
I actually am sort of a follow-up to one of your earlier callers. I, too, am an only child, and I'm in my 40s now, and I have never, ever had a roommate sans my family currently, my wife and children.
Yeah. And do you regret that you missed the experience?
No, not at all. The reason why is exactly the stories I've been listening to the entire hour. My friends in college, I even had a single dorm room. My family paid extra for that just because we just knew to eliminate the potential, butting of heads or anything. But my friends thought I was crazy. They said, "Why are you spending so much money on this rent? Come move in with us." And I told them I would have paid quadruple. To live by myself.
A committed, no roommate guy in Brad in St. Bonifacius, and it looks like you sidestep it, but who knows? You might have made some great friends there, Brad. It's hard to know. Our time grows short, but Joe in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thanks, Tom. Yeah. I'm a retired senior, and I'm looking or thinking about trying to buy a home with people in the same situation as full equity partners.
So that would be roommates with a contractual connection.
Right. So the commitment comes up front. Everybody realizes that this could potentially work for them very well, and you're committed to the idea, and you've got skin in the game.
Joe, may I ask you, Joe, how old you are, just so we can kind of picture what you're...
Sure, I'm 68.
And why are you thinking at age 68 about buying a home with a couple of other people who essentially would be co-owners and roommates?
Well, I could continue to live in my little box like a lot of people do in this country, and I can continue to pay my bills, but yeah. That would probably preclude me from taking trips that I might like to take and do other activities. So I think it could be very aspirational in that regard.
So you're really right along the lines Elizabeth Bernstein was describing earlier, where you're looking at this freeing you up economically to live a little larger.
Right. Say three people, two other people, and I think that's a good idea because then you have an objective third party. I mean, I'm healthy and sane and rational today.
Yeah.
Right. Who's to say I will be tomorrow? And that third person could say, things have changed, your behavior has changed, and... maybe there's something going on. Maybe you've had a minor stroke or we're in the early stage of dementia.
Joe, you're thinking it all through, and we wish you a lot more great tomorrows with it. Elizabeth Bernstein, this is really interesting here. Both, you know, live in a better place and live a little larger, have some extra change for vacations and all the rest. That big boomer generation you and Stephanie were talking about, Joe is exhibit A there of saying really ready to plunge in and try something roommate dependent.
Exactly. I want to have a good life. I want to be able to travel. I want to have a nice home. And also, you know, I want somebody to know if I, you know, choked on popcorn last night. I don't want someone to find me 3 days from now. I want someone to be able to sort of assess my health, something I might not notice as I'm getting older, if I'm declining. I think that's important. And one thing we really didn't talk about is loneliness and isolation. They have huge health effects. It's really negative health effects for people who are lonely. And certainly that's a danger as we get older. So this can be such a buffer to that. So I think that that's a wonderful solution.
Sounds like a time when we may actually need a new vocabulary around roommates and living circumstances. People want companionship. They've got economic needs, some because they're young, some because they're old. Stephanie, it sounds like we may be moving on to a little bit of new ground here as traditional families change and morph and sometimes go away.
Absolutely. And I think that it sounds like Joe has thought this through and weighed the pros and cons, which is the most important thing, both when moving in with a new person, but also when making such a big financial commitment. So I say go for it. And like Elizabeth was saying, there are financial but also health benefits, which is fantastic.
70-odd stories in The Roommates, True Tales of Friendship, Rivalry, Romance, and Disturbingly Close Quarters. And still, Stephanie Wu says, go for it. Stephanie, it's been great talking with you this hour. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, and thanks to all the callers. There were some fantastic stories today.
Yeah, really good stories. Joe, we wish you terrific luck with your new housemates, if that's the way you go. Read Elizabeth Bernstein. Maybe she'll have some advice for you along the way. She writes the Bonds on Relationships column for the Wall Street Journal. Joins us today from Miami, Florida. Elizabeth, great to have you as well. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Listeners, good luck with all your living circumstances. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.